are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves, and happy Wednesday. Happy New Year, everybody. Happy 2020. Recording this here on New Year's Day as we get ready for the Milwaukee Bucks and Timberwolves tonight. We, of course, are going to preview that game. The Bucks are the league's best team. They're 30-5. They've already won 30 games, which at this point sounds like not a terrible finishing win total for the Timberwolves this year. So we'll preview that game here in a few moments. First, I want to do something a little bit different. It is a new year after all, so I guess new year, new segment. We're going to take kind of a broader view, so I guess this is really a one-time segment, a broader view of the last decade for the Wolves. As many of you likely know, I am also one of the site editors over at Dunking with Wolves, the fan-sided Timberwolves blog, and I've been over there for about 7 years. One of our writers just published a piece on New Year's Eve that was a look back at the past decade and ranked the five best players that played for the Timberwolves in the past decade. I think that that is actually a pretty interesting conversation. There's four easy ones that'll be in the top five, and it depends on if you're saying the best players, most memorable players, most significant players for whatever reason. I mean, if you're going strictly best players, as the writer, his name's Tyler Aliperto, by the way. I mean, obviously, Karl Anthony Towns, Kevin Love are in that top five. Ricky Rubio has to be from a longevity and how good he was when he was with the team. And then that's where it gets really interesting, because if you want to really dig in deep on, best players, well, obviously, Jimmy Butler, you could make an argument he was the best player, the best, had the best single season of any player of the decade for the Timberwolves. I'm not sure that I'd make that argument, but you could. And in terms of two-way player, full body of work in his career, and he had a great, all-star season when he's with the Wolves, led them to the playoffs. So he's obviously in that conversation. When I look at the top five players of the decade, I don't necessarily just look at purely the best. I think it's a combination. And I think the result and how good the player is, how good the team was while the player was on the team, which of course for the Wolves, they only made the playoffs once in the last decade, incredibly enough. I think it all matters. It all plays into what it's kind of a body of work situation, where I think the thing that's weighed the heaviest is how good the player was during their career in Minnesota. And then secondly, it's how many games they contributed to as a member of the Timberwolves. And I think that those are the two biggest things. So Butler isn't in my top five players of the decade. If we're just saying top five players talent-wise that played for the Timberwolves, result beyond that doesn't matter, then yeah, Butler's in the top five along with Towns, Love, Ricky Rubio. Those are the obvious ones. If you're just looking at the top five Timberwolves of the decade and you leave the word best out of it, who do you think of when you think of the Timberwolves of the past decade? Jimmy Butler doesn't even really come to mind, which I know is weird because they made the playoffs one time in the last decade, and it was largely due to Jimmy Butler, but the stint was so short, and I think he was pushed out of my mind so quickly, and the whole thing was very weird. So I don't include him in my top five Timberwolves of the decade, my top five Timberwolves of the decade is how I would phrase it. I think number one is pretty much a no-brainer. It's got to be Karl Anthony Towns. He still hasn't played quite as many games as Kevin Love, but the fact that he's still ascending and his ceiling is still so high, and he had a little bit more of an impact on the defensive end recently than Love did as a defender. But I think that both of those guys are 1A and 1B at this stage. I still put Towns number one, put Kevin Love number two. The numbers that he was able to put up, and also just the impact on the game, he was really amazingly ahead of his time when he was in his prime, in terms of a guy who was a top flight rebounder and one of the league's best, certainly best 3-point shooting big men, but impactful offensive players. The different offenses he played in, from Rick Adelman's offense making him be a little bit more of a distributor, and then taking the reins off, obviously, early in his career, Love had to deal with Kurt Rambis and not getting the playing time that he deserved. But I think he's 1B to Karl Anthony Towns, 1A. So if I'm having to pick, Towns is one, Love is two. Tyler over at Dunking with Wolves, he had Andrew Wiggins number three on his list, and this is where it gets a little bit interesting. He's not number three on my list. I'm gonna put him off for now. I think number three has to be Ricky Rubio. He was beloved by fans, He has the ninth most games played by any player in Timberwolves history. And Towns will pass him later this year. He's only seven behind, but nobody else is close to passing him. No active Timberwolf is anywhere close. So Rubio is going to be a top 10 Timberwolf for games played for at least the next few years. And that matters. Also, the impact he had on the fans, the ceiling of those Rubio Love teams, the 40 win team that missed the playoffs, that had a positive point differential and was historically speaking a team that had a high probability to make the playoffs based on their point differential and the way that they were losing games, how dynamic that offense was. And then obviously the Ricky Rubio torn ACL in his rookie year, side derailed things, the Kevin Love infamous knuckle pushups. Those Love and Rubio years had a legit playoff ceiling, and not just a 8-seed ceiling. Those teams easily could have been, you know, second round playoff type teams, home court advantage teams. I'm not sure that in the Western Conference at, you know, it was just prior to and during, I guess, the ascent of the Golden State Warriors to what they are today. So, you know, who knows? Anything could have happened. I don't know that they were, you know, they certainly weren't championship contending teams, but they were good, solid playoff teams if the Rubio ACL and the Love broken hand more than once doesn't happen. And if that 40 win season, if a couple balls bounce differently, the Wolves are in the playoffs that year as well. In a year that they fell on some hard luck. So Rubio is a clear number three. And I think that that's pretty safe. He was number four on Tyler's list again, over at Dunking with Wolves. Number four, I think this is where it gets really interesting. I think it's a clear top three. And then beyond that, you're kind of stuck with the guys who have played the most games, whether that be Andrew Wiggins or Gorgui Dieng. Both of those guys, Gorgui Dieng is fourth in franchise history in games played, unbelievably enough. Wiggins is number six in games played in franchise history, so it'd be easy to slot those guys in. I think on my list, what I'm going to do is I would put Gorgui Dieng fourth. I mean, he was on the team. He's been on the team since 2014. He's actually the longest tenured Wolf right now. He's got a year on Andrew Wiggins. He's played 480 games for the franchise. He's got to play another, year and a half with the Wolves to pass Doug West for third on the list. And I guess, I mean, he's under contract, so unless they're able to move him, very well could happen. And Gorgui's peaks were solid. I mean, there's a reason he got the contract he did, and part of that was, of course, due to the cap explosion when Gorgui signed his extension, and he is overpaid for what he provides. But there's a reason why he was, at least it wasn't thought of as insane that the Wolves gave him the deal that they did a couple of years or 3 years ago, I guess. Gorgui had that 1 year under Tom Thibodeau. He started all 82 games next to Towns. He averaged 10-8 in 32 minutes a game. He's kind of starting to reinvent himself on offense in terms of stretching his range from mid range to 3-point range. He went from shooting no threes a game early in his career to half a three a game in that year when he started 82 games to just under one three per game the last couple seasons. Now he's attempting 2.3 3-pointers a game and shooting them at a career high 34.4%. And, you know, he's only averaging about 7-6 this year. For his career, he's averaging 8-6. But when he's been on the court, he's been a good player. If you look at all the advanced metrics, everything suggests that he's been a good defensive player, primarily due to being a solid rebounder and very good in the pick and roll. Not as much. He has a reputation, still pretty undeserved, as a shot blocker. I mean, he's okay. He's a good shot blocker, but he's not the shot blocker he was at Louisville, for instance, in college. And I think it's just due to his size and lanky frame and wingspan. But he's, you know, he's an okay shot blocker. He's a good rebounder, solid rebounder, and he's really good in the pick and roll. And all that adds up to being a solid defensive player. And that was one of the reasons Tom Thibodeau liked him so much, is he was able to play in his pick and roll scheme on defense quite well. And he's been good on offense. I mean, he's had up and down stretches. The last couple of years are rough for him when he didn't know his role. But I think he pretty clearly is number four on this list. And then that brings us to number five, which is where I think the debate really begins. If you want Andrew Wiggins or if you want to put somebody else at number five. So we're going to talk about that slot coming up next year. Okay, let's first talk about Andrew Wiggins, because I can totally see the case for putting Wiggins here. And again, Tyler Aliperto had him third on his list, and I wouldn't fault you if you did that, just from an, you know, rookie of the year, games played standpoint. Again, sixth in team history in terms of games played. and obviously a dynamic player coming on strong this year, max contract. When you think Wolves, you kind of think Wiggins over the past, you know, half decade. That said, in terms of on-court production, and also, I mean, you could talk points scored too. I didn't even mention all that, but I mean, if we're just talking raw points scored, Wiggins already ranks second on the Timberwolves all-time list in points scored. He's just over halfway to Kevin Garnett, so that's almost surely not going to happen. And he's only about 800 points, 700 points ahead of Karl-Anthony Towns. But Wiggins is second in franchise history in points scored, so leaving him off of an all-decade team is maybe a little bit dangerous. But I also think that given what he's provided compared to expectations and what the actual on-court impact has been, I would leave him off of my top five Wolves of the decade. If I'm thinking five Wolves for the decade, he's not on that list. I'm thinking Karl-Anthony Towns. I'm thinking Kevin Love. I'm thinking Ricky Rubio, Gorgui Dieng. And then Wiggins is number six for me. Number five, I'm going to go with Nikola Pekovic. Nikola Pekovic was pretty unquestionably the Wolves' second best player on some of those Rick Adelman teams. I guess you could say third best player. It was really the trio of Love, Rubio, and Pekovic that got this team, at least in the conversation, when it came to the playoffs. I mean, you look at the team in 12 and 13 that had 31 wins and then built to 40 wins the next year. And again, as I mentioned earlier, talk about all the injuries that those teams underwent. Talk about the some of the uncertainty there. The 31 win team in the 12 and 13 season, that was the year that Kevin Love broke his hand, only played 18 games. Ricky Rubio came back following his torn ACL, played 57 games and wasn't himself, only started 47 of the 57 games. That was the year that the previous season in Rubio's rookie year, they were building towards being a playoff team, and it was expected. And then the following year was the unlucky season with 40 wins when they were relatively healthy. Love played 77 games. Rubio played the whole season, but still wasn't quite himself. Certainly wasn't. It was actually probably Rubio's most disappointing season because it was between his rookie kind of bursting onto the scene version of himself and then his older, more established understanding of who he was. Rubio shot 38% from the field that season. Love was still awesome. He was an all-star in his age 25 season, but the team won just 40 games despite having a positive point differential. So all that to say, Pekovic was a really important part of those teams. In fact, in that 40-win season, Peck played 54 games. He averaged 17.5 points, 8.7 rebounds, shot 54% from the floor, and was just a dominant force. There weren't that many rebounds to go around. Kevin Love was pulling down 12 and a half a game. The offense revolved around Love. Obviously, Kevin Martin was a big part of those teams too in terms of scoring and three-point shooting. But Pekovic was a huge part of what those teams were able to do. And there were, you know, a list of guys that Pekovic could just dominate, from the Andre Drummonds of the world to some of the other Western Conference big men, that when Peck was able to get on the floor, he was extremely effective and allowed there to be a little bit of space for Love to operate on the perimeter. Teams couldn't really guard Pekovic one-on-one, but they had to because of Love in a lot of cases, and they couldn't afford to bring two to double Pekovic. They obviously couldn't leave Love open on the perimeter. They couldn't leave Kevin Martin. And then Love was also going to be crashing the glass from the other side, and Peck took full advantage of that. So for me, I think he lands number five on this list. And if you want to talk about some of those all-time numbers, obviously Peck's career was cut short due to his chronic foot issues. But if you look at the Timberwolves franchise in terms of games played, he still manages to land 16th on the list. He's only, you know, one behind Dean Garrett, five behind Christian Laettner. So he's right in that, you know, that middle teens range, just, you know, 30, 40 games behind Rasho Nesterovic. So Peck put in his time. He was here on the Wolves for six seasons, which is the same number of seasons that Wiggins has been on the team so far, the same number of seasons Love and Rubio played for the team, but his number of games was down because of his injuries. So Peck's right there in that conversation in terms of longevity with the team. He's 17th all-time in scoring for the Timberwolves in terms of total points. Again, just behind Ricky Rubio and Anthony Peeler on that list. So I think that it's not a crazy argument to put. And if we're talking about talent on-court impact, Peck's on-court impact was far superior to that of Andrew Wiggins when it comes to what he actually was able to provide efficient offense, consistent rebounding, solid defense, all things that Wiggins has struggled to do. And it's a little unfair, maybe. Wiggins gets graded on a curve somewhat because of the expectations being the number one overall pick and winning rookie of the year. But the actual in a vacuum on-court production was much more consistent, much more beneficial from Pekovic than some of the empty numbers that Andrew Wiggins has put up in the first five-plus seasons of his career. All right, next up, we're going to preview Bucks-Wolves that will be happening on Wednesday night from Milwaukee. The Timberwolves are in Milwaukee tonight to take on the Bucks. The Bucks, of course, as I mentioned earlier, have been the league's best team, and it's not close. They're the first team to 30 wins on the season. They're 30-5. The next closest team, the Lakers, have 26 wins. The Heat and Clippers both have 24. The Rockets, Celtics, Raptors, Sixers, and Nuggets all have 23 wins. The Bucks have far and away been the best team. They also have had far and away the best player, individual player in the league. Giannis, it's really not close. In 32 games, Giannis has been just unbelievable. James Harden's really the only other player in the league that's in the same stratosphere in terms of on-court production so far this year. Giannis's numbers, 30.3 points per game, 12.8 rebounds, 5.7 assists, 1.3 steals, and 1.2 blocks a game. He's still shooting just 32.7% from beyond the arc, taking five threes a game, but his overall field goal percentage is 55.5%. That means he's shooting 63% on two-point attempts. And he's also still only a 60% free throw shooter. But because he gets to the rim so easily and can score at the rim so effectively, and he's not a bad enough free throw shooter that it would make any sense at all to be, you know, hacking Giannis every time down the court. But it would make him that much more dangerous if he were able to stabilize his free throw shooting just a little bit. That said, 13 rebounds a game is crazy too. And not necessarily, I don't think that was expected at all. As a rookie, he played in 77 games and he only rebounded the 4.4 rebounds per game. Granted, he was 19, but that went up steadily every year to about 7 a game, second year, 8 a game the next year, 9 a game, his first All-Star season. And now every year since then, it's continued to climb 30 points and 13 rebounds a game. From a guy that was essentially playing, I mean, he was playing point guard early in his career, and now he's his own guy. I mean, you look at his basketball reference profile, and he's got four different positions listed just under the top profile part where they have the pronunciation, different players, their nicknames, et cetera, their height, weight, all that. It says position, power forward and point guard and small forward and shooting guard. He's had entire seasons where each of those four positions has been his primary position, which shows his versatility. It also shows some of the poor coaching that happened early in his career for the Bucks. But he is the total package and almost unquestionably the league's best player now. I mean, you certainly say so far this season, but in terms of what he provides night in and night out, he's still only 25 years old. So he's got 2-3 years left as he's still ascending into those prime years. And it's terrifying. As for the Wolves, things are rough on the injury front. They are going to be without Jake Layman, Karl-Anthony Towns, and Andrew Wiggins. They were all ruled out on New Year's Eve. So 24 hours prior to the game, all three were rolled out, which is unusual for the Wolves to just say that early. I wonder if those guys aren't even making the trip. That's possible. It's just a one-game road trip. Teague was listed as doubtful with a right knee sprain, which is new. He only played 20 minutes in the game on Monday. We didn't hear whether or not there was an injury, but perhaps there was, although Shabazz Napier played well enough that there wasn't really much concern over Teague at all why he wasn't on the court. But at any rate, doubtful with a knee sprain. And questionable, Travion Graham and Noah Vonleh, they both missed the game on Monday. Graham still has flu-like symptoms. Somehow Wiggins has been out for almost a week now. He hasn't played since last Thursday, so 6 days? Vonleh has his left gluteal contusion and is questionable. And then Josh Okogie is on injury report as probable with right elbow bursitis, which is a different issue than he missed some games. I think it was a knee tendonitis issue that caused Okogie to miss a game or two earlier in the season. So the Wolves continue to be the walking wounded. They did call up Jalen Knoll for the game from the G League. To my knowledge, I don't believe Jordan McLaughlin's with the team. So if Teague doesn't play and with no Wiggins, it looks like it's going to be a really big Shabazz Napier game. And beyond that, not really sure what the Wolves will do. I guess Jarrett Culver will probably handle a lot, even though his playing time had been going down a little bit lately. He started the other night, had his career high 27 points. So definitely a MASH unit once again for the Wolves. They're going to be really thin going into Milwaukee to play the league's best team. I don't know how much of this matchup we really need to dive into other than the Bucks are basically the best in the league at most things. They have the league's best defense in terms of defensive rating, third best offensive rating. They play at the league's fastest pace, and their point differential is absurd. They've outscored opponents. Their differential is plus 13.2 so far this year. The next best point differential in the league is the Celtics at 7.9. It's not even close. The Lakers are at a 7.1. I mean, it would be a minor miracle if the Wolves were able to pull this game out, quite frankly. The Bucks are top five in three-point attempts per game. They're 12th in three-point shooting percentage. They get to the line a fair amount. They don't shoot well at the line. They're 29th in free throw percentage. That would maybe be their biggest weakness, is consistency at the free throw line. And then they're also the league's best rebounding team, and they're top 10 in assists and blocks as well. Outside of Giannis, the team really... Nobody else is a standout rebounder. Basically, everybody just plays their position, rebounds their position well. I mean, they've got the Lopez brothers are both on this team, Robin and Brooke, and they're both part of the rotation. Brooke's obviously a little bit bigger part of the rotation. His three-point shooting numbers are way down this year. He's shooting just 30.6% from deep, but he's still a big part of what they do. Eric Bledsoe and Chris Middleton are the other primary scorers. George Hill's been very good off the bench for them as a backup point guard so far this year as well. But the Wolves will just need to do their best to keep everybody, not name Giannis, off the glass. Giannis is going to get his, but if they can hold everybody else down a little bit, they'll give themselves a shot in this game. In terms of shooters on this team, George Hill is shooting a crazy 52% from beyond the arc as backup point guard so far this year. Also, Kyle Korver and Chris Middleton are the other outstanding shooters, but really almost everyone can shoot. Somewhat ironically, Giannis is one of the worst three-point shooting players on this team. Ersan Ilyasova is back in Milwaukee. Wesley Matthews, Eric Bledsoe, all those guys are shooting at or above league average, and Giannis is just below league average from three. So an extremely dynamic offense, a fast-paced offense. Expect a really quick game. Both teams get up and down the floor. The Wolves, of course, are far inferior in really every way, but especially when it comes to shooting three-pointers. Without Towns, they're going to have issues on the glass as well. So they're going to need big performances from guys like Robert Covington and Shabazz Napier once again. I'm sure Naz Reid and Gorgui Dieng are both going to get tons of run in this game, and the Wolves are probably just going to have a game plan of hoisting as many threes as they can to give themselves at least a shot at winning this game, although it certainly won't be easy. All right, we'll be back on Thursday to recap Wolves-Bucks from Wednesday night, take a peek ahead at the weekend and what's on tap for the Wolves moving forward. That's all we have for you today. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.